This is Tanya Kern with Floor Trends and Installation, and this is the Floor Talk Podcast. In collaboration with Install, the United Brotherhood of Carpenters Military Veterans Program provides free comprehensive training to service members transitioning to civilian life. Flooring installation is one of the options. In this episode, we speak with Mark Benacristo, Executive Director of Millwright Piledriver Labor Management, who spearheaded the program's development, and David Gross, Executive Director of Install. Mark, I was hoping maybe you could just start by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm a fourth generation millwright. I went through the apprenticeship in Detroit, Michigan, out of local 1102. I spent about 20 of my years, I'm a 30-year member this year, and I spent 20 of my years working for General Electric, running their union labor arm. So a company called Atlantic Plant Maintenance, which is a wholly owned affiliate. And I got involved with them basically as a first year apprentice. I was working at a nuclear outage at Michigan at Fermi Nuclear. And I had a great mentor out there who made sure I was involved in every aspect of the outage. And from there, I started moving up really quickly. I became a foreman, became a general foreman, a superintendent, and then an area manager. And then they wanted me to move from Detroit to Cincinnati. And I said, that wasn't much of an upgrade. So if they saw something in me, why don't you bring me to the headquarters? So they called my bluff. They brought me to Houston, Texas. And I've been here for 14 years. I left APM in 2018 and took a role with the International as the Executive Director of the Millwright Piledriver Labor Management in 2018. Part of my involvement with GE, we did a lot of work for Duke Energy, which you're familiar with down in your area. And there was a lot of non-union sites down there. And we had met with the UBC International and with Duke's leadership team about doing some outages. And we went and we did a three-year project at Belews Creek in Greensboro, North Carolina. And that kind of got me the exposure to the International and really got my name out there I had a great team. So I had great millwrights from all over the country that I worked with, and with their help, I moved up really quick.
So how did you ultimately find your way to the UBC Military Veterans Program?
So the Millwright Piledriver Labor Management is made up of trustees of management and labor. And I was a trustee at the time, and I had asked, why aren't we recruiting at the military? And it never really caught traction. So on day one, when I was hired, General Vice President Doug Baines at the time asked me, he says, hey, Mark, he says, why aren't we recruiting at the military bases? And he gave me the green light to get started. And within 3 months, we were at Fort Hood, which is now Fort Cavazos in Texas, walking the site. And within 6 months, we had our first program kicked off. So I'm not a veteran, but I am a true fan of our military and what they do and what they sacrifice for our freedoms. So I was happy to take this up and really go after it.
And 3 months doesn't seem like a long timeline. Like, that seems like a fast track.
We fast tracked it. We hit a few bumps in the road. We were originally told we'd be able to be on base and they would provide space for us to do this training, because we do the training. It's 100% free to the veteran. We don't charge them anything. We make our current total, we spend about $1.3 million a year training at the five different sites that we're at, and we don't charge them anything for it.
Mm-hmm. David, would you define the relationship between Install and the UBC Military Veterans Program?
Yeah, so a couple things to clarify on that. There's not just one program. Mark's program with the Millwrights and Piledrivers, that's a little more comprehensive and you know, largely due to the fact that he spearheaded that from, you know, really from its inception. But the helmets to hard hats is something that install benefits from tremendously. We have many veterans, you know, service people of all kinds from all branches that find their way into flooring. So it's almost like a filtering process. The UBC has a large and various military programs. And once the veteran finds the craft that suits them best, be it, you know, framing, drywalling, flooring, millwright, what a cabinet making, and then they go from there. But the one that, you know, cuts across all crafts with the UBC is the helmets, the hard hats. Mark and his team have just taken it to another level with the inroads they've made and some of the other programs that they have that they're taking advantage of. But we couldn't be happier at install with the number of members we have that were previous military service, their aptitude for work and getting a job done and being on time and approaching things and team building and, you know, productivity. They just have a leg up because of their military status. And then through the apprenticeship, they're allowed to use their GI Bill in a lot of instances where it makes it valuable for them to not only be part of the UBC, have the apprenticeship, get the training, but there's the GI benefits they can collect as well. So there's a lot of advantages for the military and the UBC install to work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Sanjay, I also sit on the advisory board for Helmets to Hard Hats. So every applicant through Helmets to Hard Hats currently comes through my office. So we average anywhere from 200 to 300 people a week that are applying from Helmets to Hard Hats. So in Helmet, as Dave said, there's a difference in the programs. Helmets to Hard Hats is a national organization that's run through the National Building Trades. So when a military veteran or somebody in the military finds out about Helmets to Hard Hats, basically they can go to the Helmets to Hard Hats website. They can look at all the different crafts, and then they hit a checkbox of which craft they're interested in. That'll generate an email that goes out to all the representatives from the different trades, letting them know that that person's interested. So the key is, if somebody applies on there, is to respond to them very quickly. Because if they put multiple trades, whoever calls them first is more than likely going to get that person.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because Dave had mentioned that they need to figure out what area they're most interested in. But how do they do that?
So when they reach out to us and tell us they're interested, what we do is I've got two recruiters that work for me. They'll reach out to those individuals. They'll send them a general email with all the information about the UBC, the different crafts from flooring to millwrights to interior systems to general carpentry, and kind of give them that overview of what the UBC is. And then we ask them to provide a resume and exactly where they're going to transition to. And then we start making the connections for them. So we'll do behind the scenes, we'll give them coaching on their resume if they need, you know, if they need to clean that up or if they need to add some skill sets. If, you know, once we know what their MOS is, we can translate that into what they did in the military. And then what we'll do is we'll start reaching out to the training coordinators around the country, depending on where they're at. So if you were in Atlanta, we'd reach out to local 1263 or to the carpenter local in that area and start letting them know that this person's interested. They're getting out of the military in 6 months. Let's start the conversation. Let's, you know, keep it active, coach them on what they need to do. And then when they get out, when they transition out, they get direct entry into any apprenticeship they want to go to.
This sounds like a very well-oiled machine.
It's a lot of moving pieces, mm-hmm. but we keep it moving the best we can.
Mm-hmm. And which is exactly why, you know, I'm so glad Mark could come on with us, because there's just so much to know with our military programs, because it is so comprehensive. It applies to so many crafts, And, you know, anytime you're dealing with a government agency or a transitioning, there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of check marks to take care of. So it's hard for any one person to do all that. So, you know, Mark, he's a good guy to go for the information. He sort of understands the big picture of that better than anyone.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about eligibility? Who is eligible?
So for the Military Veterans Program, basically it's a skill bridge program run by the Department of Defense and the Department of Labor. And you have to be within your last 180 days of service. So when they come into their last 180 days, what they'll do, depending on what branch they're in, because each branch has their own acronym. So it can be TAP, which is Transition Assistance Program. It can be Skill Bridge, which is what this program falls under. Generally, what'll happen is in that 180 days, a service member will have to go through the TAP program, the Transition Assistance Program. And what they'll do there, that's at the base level, and they'll go through a bunch of classes on their exit, basically on their exiting. So they're learning what it's going to be like to be a civilian. They've had everything given to them, they've had the schedule built for them for the last 4 years, you know, whether it's drills, chow time, they know exactly where they have to be every minute of the day. When they get into that transition period, they start going through classes of resume building, career seeking, what's out there for them, some coaching, and then they get exposed to the skill bridge. So basically, skill bridge, everyone has a different program. So for example, at Fort Cavazos, there's 56 different programs for skill bridge. So there's a lot of choices. Now in there's three or four different truck driving schools. There might be, you know, depending on what your MOS was, if you were into intelligence, you may want to go into an IT background. If you were a nurse, you may want to continue down the medical field. Most of our people come out of infantry. There's not much for infantry except for policing and public service like that. And a lot of those guys don't want to do that anymore. They've seen enough of it.
Right.
They're looking for something they can do. And unfortunately, shooting stuff and blowing stuff up just is not a career path. So what we do is we go and we'll present. And again, each base is different. Currently, like Fort Cavazos and Fort Campbell, we go and we brief once a month. Same thing with Fort Drum. JBLM, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, they brief every week. So we'll go to a briefing and there'll be 75 to 100 soldiers, service members in that briefing looking for what they're going to do next. Mm-hmm. Each program gets an opportunity to brief the soldiers for 10 minutes. And you have to get your elevator speech out, tell them what you're all about, and then they set up like a job fair where they can go table to table and come find you. So we spend a lot of time and a lot of money trying to get our message out, who we are, what we offer, because a lot of these programs will touch their GI Bill. And like Dave said, you know, those are benefits that they earned that they can use for themselves. We don't want them using those benefits on taking a class that isn't offering them a job or isn't guaranteeing them work.
Right.
So when they get in that last 180 days, we brief them. They put in an application. Basically, they call it a packet. Their command will, everybody's already approved by either an MOA or an MOU at each base. They'll go through that packet, fill it out, send it off to their command. Command signs off that, hey, you're going to be assigned to the Military Veterans Program for the next 8 weeks. This is where you're to report. Here's the times. And they're ours for those 8 weeks. They can't do anything else. So if they miss time or something like that, we have to report that back up to command and let them know that, hey, David didn't show up today. Hmm. And here's an issue. Each base is a little bit different, but they usually get one excused absence and then they're gone. They get that opportunity ripped away from them. So, and there isn't much we can do about it. It's not on us. It's up to them. So once the command signs off on packet, then they get assigned to us. So depending on when we have our class scheduled, they'll go through that. So those 8 weeks, when they get out, we do a graduation. We bring in contractors. We bring in business agents. Sometimes we'll bring in some politicians as well, and give them a nice certificate, give them tools. So when they get out, when they transition out, because they're in that 180 days window, they can take that 8-week class at any time. So David may take the class and then still have 2 months of service left. So then David gets instructions on when you get out, here's your ETS, your exit date. You're to call us. We line up the appointment for you to go and get indoctrined with the union, and we set up your first training class. And then we get them out to work right after that.
The resources that the UBC has invested in aligning with our military members is just tremendous. The way we've embraced the military, and it's a two-way street. Look, they're excellent candidates for our program. They know what's going on. They can get right to work and be productive. So it's a worthy investment. And who, you know, what better group to help than our veterans?
Absolutely. So you did mention that there are some instances where their resume may be lacking skill set. Are there things that you see on repeat that maybe they're lacking for their resume?
It's a military resume. Yeah. So a lot of it is they're just listing. It's more verbiage than anything else. It's mm-hmm. translating what they were doing in the military to real world civilian life. You know, so, you know, a lot of times you'll see a logistics guy and he'll say, you know, I'm a project manager, and you see that's all he has listed on his resume, but he doesn't list any of the skill sets that he actually did. So you got to go in there and coach him. Like, listen, you were doing, you know, what programs were you using? What you list all of that so that becomes more, because we'll find even if they can't be a wrench turner, you know, if they don't want to be in the trade, they may be a good fit for our contractor still as an estimator or a project manager or some sort of leadership role or even a safety manager sometimes. So we'll take their resumes and then side shuffle that and still help them out and find them a place with our contractors, which just helps us because it helps spread the word that, hey, the UBC, man, these guys are real. They didn't care that I didn't want to do the program. They still found me a job. So, yeah. And we've done that a couple different instances.
What's the average age of a person entering the program? Do you have those numbers?
Unfortunately, we can't collect age data because they're still active duty. But I would say the average, most are four, you know, service members that served 4 years mm-hmm. and then got up.
Yeah.
We've had quite a few full retirees. Did their 20 years, got out, retired, and came through. But the average is probably in that 25 to 26 age range.
It's a perfect timeline to create a whole career in trades.
Well, and as Dave said, they've got the skill set, they've got the leadership, mm-hmm. you know, they've got leadership skills. They can take command. They're used to chain of command. They can show up on time. They're clean. They're not doing drugs. They're not alcoholics. Some of them maybe, but no, they're not, you know, generally they're the exact person that we're looking for because they have that, they can work in a team environment. They know how to deal with different attitudes. Whereas when you get a high school, well, and the other thing is that the army and military, they don't pay them very well. So when they get out, they're hungry. And you put a 24-year-old military veteran versus an 18-year-old high school graduate, they get that first check and they're going to come back the next week. Mm-hmm. That 18-year-old kid, he's probably going to go party that weekend and he's going to miss a day and he's going to screw up his career because he's starting to miss days and be creating that reputation. Everything about our trades is about your reputation. It's you're building your resume every day on the job site by showing up on time, having a good attitude, and being able to take direction. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys, they don't have to have this guys. I say guys, but a lot of these applicants or service members, they don't need to have the skill sets. We're going to teach them the skill sets. What we need is the skill sets that the military already gave them, the leadership skills, being able to show up on time, having a good attitude, being able to take command and working in a team environment. they can do that. They can succeed with the UBC every day. The thing that makes it easy for them is they're going from a structure that they had to basically to the brotherhood, which is the same, very similar structure. You know, just like in the military, as you go, as you progress through your training and your skills, you're going to get a pay raise. You're going to move up to that next level. Same thing in the apprenticeship. You're going to go through your apprenticeship. You're going to get your first 6 months in, you're going to get a pay raise. You're going to get your second 6 months in, you're going to get a pay raise. And it's going to continue until you graduate. And then every year, you're still going to get a pay raise. You know, some sort of contract that's going to either up your health benefits, your retirement benefits, or your pay scale, or all three. And they like that structure. They like to know what's next. There's, you know, some solidarity there that they can understand, and it makes perfect sense to them.
David, how long has INSTALL been supporting service members?
So INSTALL was pretty much founded in its present day form in 2000. And we've been part of, you know, recruiting military and working with the military ever since then. And I'm sure the UBC was long before that. The programs that Mark laid out is one thing, but even ex-military members who may not have come right in out of the military, you know, maybe they went to work in private industry for a few years and then they find their way to us. It still applies. And I believe if they hadn't used their GI Bill at any point in the way, they can still use it down the line. So for a career transition, it's another avenue that they can take advantage of that time in the military and use it as a leg up. It's a resume marker that never goes bad.
Well, how many, do you have numbers on how many have completed the program?
So year to date, we have 628 graduates from when we started in 2019. So we've expanded to a new base every year since 2019. We start off at Fort Cavazos. Then we went to Fort Drum, then we went to Fort Campbell, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, and then we just recently started at Camp Pendleton, and now I'm actually getting emails that as we speak about Norfolk. We're looking at Norfolk right. Naval Base, which Norfolk's one that we've been trying to get on. It's when we pick these bases, we pick them by transition numbers. Mm-hmm. The bigger the base, the more transitioning service members. And for us to make it meaningful, we want to be exposed to as many transitioning service members as we can. Like a Fort Drum, for example, is a smaller base. It's 1,500 people a year that are getting out of there. If you're going to go to a place like that, you have to make sure that you're going to have the work in the area, because a lot of times, that's the other thing is when we pick these bases, 30% of the service members want to stay where they came out of. For some reason, they stay near that post. Mm-hmm. It's either they've already got a family established there, they've got kids in school, they've already bought a house, so they'll stay in those areas. So it's critical for us to pick areas where we know there's a lot of work in those areas,
right,
and that we're going to be able to put them to work. And if they want to go somewhere else, though, we help them with that as well. So a lot of times when, you know, part of our interview process is where do you want to go? And then depending on where they tell us, you know, we've had a few that want to go to Idaho, and it's like, okay, Idaho's not known for its manufacturing or, you know, a lot of buildings and things that we're involved with. So you have to be prepared for that. You have to be willing to travel. So if you're not willing to travel, that may not be your best choice. Our Fort Cavazos program is in Killeen, Texas. Killeen doesn't have a lot of industry around it, but you're close to Austin, you're close to Arlington. Houston's 3 hours away, so mm-hmm. we push a lot of people to Houston. We push more towards that Dallas-Fort Worth area versus staying in Killeen itself, because Killeen just doesn't right. have much. So you want them to be successful, but you also want to coach them to where they want to go, you know, where they're going to be the most successful.
And you know, with INSTALL, I don't have direct numbers of how many are in the program or what we've done. Just never something that we focused on. It was just always part of our program. But I know when I was instructing, I instructed in one training center in South Jersey for about 8 years. And it was not uncommon to have anywhere from 1 to 3 students per year come into the program that were affiliated with the military or that the military brought them there. So, you know, if you expand that over to the 30 markets that installs in, you can see it's significant. You know, I don't know what the percentage works out to be, but it's definitely a noticeable group. And we've had many come in through the military channels and have done good work in the field with us. And I know two off the top of my head that have gone on to become contractors because once they had the skill set, you know, their ambition, their drive, the thing that made them successful to get there, they kept going and they opened their own business and now they're employing our people. So it's definitely the cycle of life there, you know, and we appreciate their service and what they bring to the table with us.
That's fantastic.
And Tanya, for this year alone, we graduated 186 service members. So our goal for next year, currently without an expansion, we're expecting 225 graduates for next year.
And that's without Norfolk joining.
If we get Norfolk, I would imagine we would get that up and running by July. So that would be, it'd take us about 6 months to get everything worked out, get the MOU signed, and then we'd probably get two or three classes in if we got to Norfolk. Mm-hmm. But Norfolk opens up different avenues where, you know, again, the UBC represents so many different crafts. So currently we're running interior systems, millwright, pile driver, general carpenter. We're looking at some flooring possibilities, but our pile drivers also we represent the commercial divers. So Norfolk has a lot of dive teams there as well. So we're trying to open it up to capture some of that market as well.
What's your outlook for the flooring area?
When we started the program, we tried to create the curriculum so that we were doing 4 weeks of what we call Common Core curriculum. So your OSHA 10, first aid, CPR, some of the stuff that you're going to see every day, no matter what craft you're in. So rigging, the forklift driver, MOOPS, which is mobile elevated work platforms, and then blueprint reading and math for the trades. Those are all kind of, they fit in every apprenticeship that we deal with. There's some sort of aspect to that. Then we'd go into 3 to 4 weeks of skill set training. So if they wanted to be a millwright, then we'd put them through millwright training. If we wanted to be interior systems, we'd give them intro to drywall, intro to metal stud, stuff like that. So with flooring, that we started at Camp Pendleton this year with more of a pilot program where they're exposed to multiple trades throughout the program, and then they pick at the end of it, which trade they want to go into. So we're looking at how do we incorporate flooring into that, and then do we change the system across the board to everyone is going to go that route where they get exposed to all the crafts, or do we continue down the singular focus of just millwright, just pile driver, just flooring? The challenge there is you bring in more instructors when you have to do that. So it's balance of the cost and the uniqueness of the training center. So if there's a training center nearby that has those instructors available, then it makes it easy. If that training facility maybe only specializes in millwright or interior systems, and then we tend to stay that focus because just the resources aren't there. And when you're running, we run classes every 8 weeks. So if you're running 6 classes a year and you only have a half a dozen flooring guys, you might do one class with just flooring. Right. You might do one class with just millwright. So it's really just finding that balance.
Makes sense. I mean, budgets and timelines and people powers, those are all realities.
Well, it's such a great program. It's just, finding the resources to be able to be at all these different places. I mean, that's the challenge we found with expansion is it's great that we're expanding, but now we're tying up more resources all over the place and it's getting harder. So in a service member, you know, it doesn't matter where they're coming from. They can apply for any base that has a skill bridge program. So if somebody's at Fort Knox and they want to go to Fort Campbell for the training, all they have to do is get their command approval. So if command approves it, they can go. Now they can transfer over for the 8 weeks for the class. The challenge there is finding resources for them. Where are they going to stay? Who's going to pay for it? And how are we going to put them up? Some of the bases have resources for that. Some of them don't. So like Fort Cavazos, we have 8 beds that we can put people in barracks. Fort Drum has some barrack space. And I believe JBLM has some barrack space. So, but not all of them do.
And there is a behind the scenes communication with Mark and myself with install and our other crafts as well, whether it's interior systems or this sort of thing, because it's a lot of it is driven by what the service member wants to do, right? So if nobody wants to be a floor layer, there's no sense of having a floor layer instructor on base ready
right,
to go.
Right.
But for some reason, you know, in the military had an interior systems, you know, like the CBs and this sort of thing that did construction, and they were looking for interior systems and flooring and this sort of thing, then we can kind of tailor and cater to that. Mark has sent me several emails over time, just, you know, hey, what do you think of this guy? Look at his background. Here's his resume. So Mark does a good job of getting the word out to other leaders in the UBC as to the potential of what the class's makeup would be to best facilitate that class. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real strength, the ability to almost customize if need be.
Yep.
So if someone listening to this is interested in joining this program or these programs, where do they start?
They can go right to the website, www.ubcmvp.org, or they can go to helmetstohardhats.org, and they can apply that way as well. But the best way is through the ubcmvp.org. There's a join us tab right there on the website, and there's an explanation, gives all the session dates of where we're currently at. And then there should be some new testimonial video going up. So we've got some highlight videos that are being created right now. We went and did a tour of 3 of the sites 2 weeks ago and did interviews with contractors, with instructors, with the career skills program, the TAP program, and then some of our past graduates as well.
Yeah, and if there's just any military people in general, whether they've been out, you know, 1 year, 10 years, 15 years, they can always contact their local UBC or you know, Carpenters Union facility. If they happen to know that there's a council office or a training center in their area, and they can just call up and talk to somebody, and they'll put them in touch with the right people to gain entry into the program.
And they can go to carpenters.org, and underneath the contact us, we'll show them where all the training centers are.